You are listening to the Gable Media Continuing Education podcast feed, the most entertaining and convenient way for AEC professionals to get continuing education credits, including AIA-approved courses. As a Gable member, just listen and follow the link in the show notes to take a brief quiz and obtain your credit today. Enjoy! In the search for sustainable solutions, the building industry is increasingly turning to bio-based materials as an alternative to traditional, carbon-intensive construction products. From insulation to structural components, bio-based materials like hempcrete, bamboo, and reclaimed wood are gaining recognition for their environmental benefits. These materials are not only renewable, but also help sequester carbon, offering a potential pathway to lower the embodied carbon footprint of buildings, a significant contributor to global emissions. However, as demand for green building materials rises, regulatory pressures are becoming unpredictable.
This next one, sir, is a declaration of a national energy emergency.
So you also
That's
have
a big one. You know what that allows you to do? That means you can do whatever you have to do to get out of that problem. And we do have that kind of an emergency.
While some governments are strengthening sustainability standards and encouraging the adoption of eco-friendly practices, the current U.S. administration, after a $445 million investment from the oil and gas industry, seems to be hindering progress on sustainability efforts, once again withdrawing from the Paris Agreement, deregulating environmental protections, dismantling agencies, freezing climate-related funds, and promoting fossil fuel interests. Despite all that, bio-based material development continues, driven by increased awareness of the environmental impact of conventional building materials and a push toward a circular economy. While bio-based materials are still carving out their place in mainstream construction, the potential they offer in creating healthier, more sustainable environments is undeniable. From reducing emissions to promoting domestic farming and sourcing, these materials are not just a trend, they're part of a broader movement towards rethinking how we build and live in the world around us.
These products can be used everywhere, and I'm working on a regulations committee, and in the rooms you have people that are straw bale people, architects, and people that have no allegiance to any of these materials. You have hemp people, grass people, bamboo people. So hemp alone, you can do insulation in multiple ways. You have hemp wood that's used on flooring, cabinetry, desks. Then you have things like bamboo, and bamboo is amazing for structural components. There's a wide range of things that can be used for all aspects of a building.
That was my guest, Jacob Waddle. I'm Demetrius Lynch, and this is Spaces, the podcast where we explore the forces that shape our spaces and how they shape us. Thanks for coming back. In today's episode, we're revisiting the rapidly evolving world of bio-based building materials with Jacob Waddle, a strategic leader and the head of the Hemp Building Institute, or HBI. Jacob has dedicated his career to overcoming the challenges and unlocking the potential of materials like hemp in construction, particularly in affordable housing. Under his leadership, the HBI is driving key initiatives, including consulting on the hemp-based insulation solutions for multifamily retrofits project and contributing to the development of fair life cycle assessments for bio-based products. Jacob's work aims to bridge gaps in understanding and promote the adoption of sustainable, carbon-negative solutions in the building industry. Now, stick around as we explore the future of bio-based materials and how they're shaping the next generation of construction. And we'll get into all of that after this break. All right, Jacob. I recently had Cameron McIntosh on from Amerishamb, and I'm really excited to have you on to get an even bigger scope on this conversation about the hemp industry and sort of its ups and downs. So Jacob from Hemp Building Institute, thank you so much for joining me.
Demetrius, thank you for having me. I'm excited about this conversation.
Yeah, I anticipate this is going to be another good one because this is such a rapidly growing, evolving sector of our industry. And I think people, if they have questions or haven't heard of it, I think we'll be able to dig in a little bit more with you and kind of explore what's going on in the world of hemp as far as the building industry goes. To start, Jacob, can you tell me a little bit about yourself and then the Hemp Building Institute?
Yes. Educationally, I have an engineering background. I have an MBA as well. I spent years in manufacturing. The last place I was in was in automotive manufacturing as a making car parts. I was a program manager, a project engineer, and wanted to do something good with my life. I was in an industry that I didn't quite believe in the end game of. I wasn't passionate and, sat around thinking what I could do to help the world.
Your partial access code is 6. Your partial access code is 6.
World, help everybody, and really the environmental crisis sticks out to me as something that is just so huge that we have to pay attention to it. So I did a lot of research, looked at a lot of different things. And when I came across this product, Hempcrete, which is the inner stock of hemp mixed with lime and some pozzolans and things, and it creates an insulation for the walls. And I saw this and I was like, I'm a material science engineer. This is a material science problem. It's been held back because of, hemp was illegal. How can I help? Like, what can I do? This is it. This is the thing I got to focus on. So I gave my company 2 months and was like, I'm leaving. I'm going to go follow this thing. And so I started getting into hemp building. About a year later, went to a conference that was put on by this company called Hempitecture. It was like this hemp building summit where this is like the first time you got a lot of these people in the same room around the U.S. And after that, joined the USHBA, U.S. Hemp Building Association, became president there, helped lead and push that forward for a couple years, then left there and started the HBI. Right now, we're really trying to focus on getting natural building materials into affordable housing. And that's really what the Hemp Building Institute is made for. It's called the Hemp Building Institute, but soon after we started the institute, it became clear that that's not the most important thing. It's not hemp. It is what we're really trying to do here. And what we're really trying to do is to decarbonize the built environment. So our focus is to try to get that concept into affordable housing. We've seen that be a successful strategy in other countries, that the initial places that they start getting adoption of these materials are on projects that are funded by the community, that or affluent people that want to do something really cool and healthy. So those are the two ends of the spectrum.
With a material science background, how far do you think we can go with hemp into the building industry? I know we're on the insulation area right now. How far do you think we can go as far as integrating that into other components of the building?
Hempcrete, you're right, is where I started, but you're right. These products can be used everywhere. And right now, I am working with other groups that are really looking at the whole environment. Like the Bio-Based Materials Collective is a group that's just started up about a year and a half ago. And I'm working on a regulations committee. And in the rooms, you have people that are straw bale people. You have architects and people that have no allegiance to any of these materials. You have hemp people. You have grass people. You have different people, bamboo people, that represent these different bio-based materials that in the end, it's like it makes more sense to work together and think of it holistically. So hemp alone, you can do insulation in multiple ways. You can have hempcrete. You can have hemp bat insulation. There's boards that are like trying to replace like foam boards that are created. You have hemp wood that's used on flooring, cabinetry, desks. They're doing research right now to get it into being able to carry a structural load. You have pottery and interior design. You have, you know, you can have fabrics, you know, it's a little bit less construction, but then you have things like bamboo, and bamboo is amazing for structural components. So there's a wide range of things that can be used for all aspects of a building. And it's really cool because you're seeing more and more companies come out with different products that kind of fill different gaps and get us closer and closer to being able to have a fully built, complex building that is all natural. Like, well, is good for the environment. All naturals, you know, can be complicated.
Yeah. We have a lot of components in the buildings nowadays that are hybridized or composites. It seems like it would be a fairly easy transition to do some of these things like bamboo or hemp or any other bio-based to sort of, if not completely use them as the material, join them up with wood or some other component to make this composite, to make joists and glue lamp beams and different things like that. So it doesn't seem like it would be a far stretch to get there. How about on the concrete side? I know everybody mistakenly thinks hempcrete is concrete, but is there any movement on that aspect of the concrete?
The thing about hempcrete as a term is that it means like with like hemp aggregate, basically. That is the defining word. Concrete is with aggregate. So it's really highly defined by the matrix and the materials used to bond the hemp together in these products. Traditionally using lime, and lime is a vapor open system. It allows for moisture transfer. It has pockets of air in it. It does these things that help it perform as an insulation. And if you use a different binder, you can have a different result. There are people that have done research. I don't have it in front of me, but I think it's like the University of Nebraska Lincoln and Global Hemp, maybe. But there's some groups that are working on a structural product. Now, that's one aspect of concrete, is its structural side. So if you can have something that basically is using a different binder, so it can hold a structural load, you can replace it in certain aspects. Now, there's another thing about water introduction into these materials, because if they're porous and open at all, water can start basically wicking up, and you need to have separation. So that's why you can't use it as a foundation or a driveway or anything like that. That's kind of a giant leap. But there's potential, and I don't know if their product, how it interacts with water. Crushed glass, recycled glass, I think is what I've heard, like for foundations and things as an option. It's recyclable. It's not really bio-based, but it's a step in the right direction. So I believe it's possible. I don't know of any products that are really out there in the space.
Now, we got pretty deep into the history of hemp and kind of the legal side of hemp being banned and coming back and some of the recent laws that sort of unlocked this recent push for hemp being reintroduced into the industry. So we don't necessarily need to go back into the history unless there's certain things that you feel are important to bring up. But I was curious kind of where we are now, because I think you're sort of at the tip of the spear as far as the movement. Where are we at now as far as hemp and the building industry on a maybe national level, policy level, and where do we go from here?
It's kind of hard, again, to kind of separate materials, hemp specifically. So there are certain things that are hemp specific. There is the definition of what industrial hemp is. And I know that they were trying to have something in the farm bill to try to separate out like cannabinoid industrial hemp from actual use it industrial hemp, like in building materials and fabrics and things like that. So I honestly have lost track of that with all the other chaos that's been going on. But I know that that was a giant push, and I'm still hoping and thinking that's going to be successful. And if that does, hopefully it'll allow us to have less stringent testing rules and things that make hemp more burdensome than any other crop. Because in the end, that's where we need it to be. We need the crop to be an easy option. We don't need hurdles. We don't need background checks for someone that is growing product that is going to go into your wall. We don't need inspectors that might seize the crop or say that, you know, it needs to be burned because it's too high on THC when none of this stuff is ever going to be in a smokable form. So that's a big thing policy-wise for hemp. In general, with natural building or bio-based building materials, we saw a lot of progress over the last couple of years. You know, there's bio-based labeling that really came into being. There was a large push within the Inflation Reduction Act to really kind of support these materials. And now there's been a giant setback with the new administration. They don't believe that carbon's a problem. And so anything that's kind of going into that seems to be getting cut. They don't believe that environmental justice is a thing. So those are getting cut. You know, those are kind of DEI in a lot of ways, and that's no good. So you're seeing some real setbacks in our industry across the board. There's similar people that might care about international aid, might also care about natural building or doing it the right way. They're getting hit because the international aid got cut. You know, different things are happening. We got some private funding that got moved away, like the Bill Gates Foundation pulled some money from our sector.
Oh, wow.
The theory is that they did it to relocate it in the international aid sector, but that's been a hard hit for the bio-based building community. So we saw a lot of progress in a couple of years. We've had a little bit of a setback, but what the discussion is in the rooms is we never really had a hand to begin with. Like, nobody was helping us for like decades. It's like, this doesn't change the game we're playing. We just had a good year. And so while a lot of people in other industries will see these hits, like from tariffs and other things, our industry, it's kind of status quo. And so we're kind of getting back to there. Me personally, I had a $6 million grant that, as far as the Sierra Club is saying, is no longer being awarded. And that's painful for me personally and that. But the industry as a whole, the companies in it, I think we'll be able to work through this. And I think the industry will continue to grow and get stronger. Our acceleration just slowed down a little bit.
If you could pinpoint the barrier, is it misunderstanding of what industrial hemp is? Or is it not competition, but basically holding the industry back by competing industries like plastics or something like that? Or is it something else?
In my opinion, what we've seen so far for hemp specifically, misunderstanding what it was, that is the biggest number one thing that's happening. Beyond that, if people can wrap their heads around that hemp is not marijuana in any way, especially if it's being used as a building material, then the next hurdles really become entering something new into a market. So years ago, when I was president of the USHBA and first got in there, that was the discussion, is like, what are our hurdles? And one of our hurdles was not being in the IRC, not being in the International Residential Code. So that became a giant effort. And actually in 2024, the Appendix BL Hemp Lime Hempcrete Construction was released, which both I and actually Cameron McIntosh worked on. That was a big step forward. And it's trying to gain that acceptance that this isn't some like weird rogue product. Like, these are legitimate building products that happen to also be good for the environment. And for the most products out there are healthier options for your home and your living space. So I think right now we're getting past most of the regulatory hurdles, or like that's really, you know, I mentioned with the Bio-Based Materials Collective on a regulations committee to really try to pinpoint where else we need to go and how to get there. So the next thing is like market understanding and knowing the benefits of it, why they should use it, how they can use it, and if I need to do something different, and if they do need to do something different, giving them that education. So there's a project that I am consulting on by Home Innovations Research Lab. It's New York State funded, and it's called Hemp-Based Insulation Solutions for for multifamily retrofits. And the first step in that is a market analysis. So they're going and asking people in the industry, would you use this? Why yes? Why no? What's holding you back? And so hopefully the end product of that project will give us some of those insights. And that release will be something that the entire industry can use and understand. So I have my theories about market acceptance, but really, why try to come up with things when people can actually tell you what they're thinking? And so hopefully this will give us the insight we need to know what we need to do next to get people to move this industry forward on the purchasing side, because the product side is developing constantly and it's getting better and better.
I personally feel like there's this baked in uphill battle for you guys. Unfortunately, the whole Reefer Madness campaign is sort of still in the ether and will for a time be a easy way for competition to block the hemp industry in particular from moving forward or slow that growth. And I'm wondering where, if sort of the focus is more on the education side to the market, do you think there's merit in that, or is it getting the regulatory bodies on your side first?
So I think, you know, we're making progress in the regulatory bodies. Like you said, education is key. And the real question is, who are the decision makers you need to educate that can influence whether these are used or not? Like with architects, you know, the U.S. Hemp Building Association has acquired the right license from the AIA in order to create lessons that have continuing education units. If you can produce some of those and then get architects in the room and make sure that architects have the understanding. And really, the story is not that complicated. The story really becomes, let's stop talking about hemp and let's just start talking about, we have this building material that has plant material in it. Because the hemp, again, for qualities that make it different than other plants, it's not effectively doing that as a building material. If you did the same thing, like if it was straw instead of hemp, you would have the same intoxication effect or whatever you want to say. So education is key. A big part of that is, who do we educate? Because it's not easy to educate. It's time consuming. And if you educate the wrong people, you're going to have a bunch of people that are really happy in the room, but it's not going to do anything for building houses.
Yeah.
And I would also like to point out the fact of hemp, as much as the Reefer Madness stuff kind of holds us back, it's also made us like the rock star of the bio-based building world, because we're the cool bad kids, because we're the hemp building materials. And it's really actually between the products, it's kind of given us an advantage. But I don't know. That's just
interesting.
It's a truth, but I don't know if it's that great or if it makes up for the fact that we have to fight all the time to explain to people you can't smoke the house. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, on the front of the continuing education through my other company, Gable Media, which this podcast is through, we do continuing education, and I'm going to make sure that this episode goes into our pool. So we'll have this and Cameron's episode as soon as I possibly can get it in our pool as a continuing education credit. So stay tuned if you're listening to this. Okay, Jacob, so...
Your partial access code is S. Your partial access code is S.
Let's say you did get that $6 million grant. Did you already have your shopping list made out and plans for how you were going to spend it?
Yeah, they don't just give out money. I don't know what these people are talking about. It's not like they're just like, this guy, like I met this guy, I think he needs some money. Like, you have to have a well drawn out plan that you are planning to execute in order to win a grant. And yeah, so we are going to create an environmental product declaration calculator. It was going to be like 5 employees. It was probably going to hire 6 different companies within the industry to do different roles along the way, and then help, you know, 3 or 4 dozen companies in the industry get EPDs for their products, and then create a pathway to make it so much simpler for everybody to do it. The project was, I guess I jumped way ahead here. The primary focus of most EPDs for the simplest reasons right now is carbon, and it's called your global warming potential. And it also, it doesn't necessarily represent CO2. It also can represent other gases, but they all equate to a CO2 level. So, because that's what everyone thinks in. You get an environmental product declaration by doing a life cycle assessment. This gets weird because you can do a life cycle assessment without creating an EPD, but if you create an EPD, it came from a life cycle assessment. If a whole bunch of people are going to be doing very similar life cycle assessments, it makes sense to have the same rules so that these things are easily comparable. That is a product category rule. It is the method with which you do the LCA. And when you're doing a life cycle assessment, there's a lot of decisions made. There's a lot of, oh, do I count it as this or do I count it as that? Or what if I do, like, so there's lots of different ways to look at it. A PCR defines those paths and says, you go this direction here, this direction there, this direction, so that these things are comparable. Because if you go down different paths, you get different math and it ends up with different answers. So the first step was to create a product category rule. The product category rule is focused on the unique aspect of these products. So the agricultural growth to the processing the material going into a production plant that then takes it to make it the building material it's going to become. Okay, so what they call this is A1 to A3. There's like A, B, C, and even D on these things. A is basically the creation of the product. B is the use of the product, and C is the end of life of the product. And D is extra stuff, which includes like recycling and other information that you want to add on. But really, those are the three sections: production, use, end of life. And this is really just the beginning of production because you're growing something on a farm and it's unique because of that. And then end of life because these materials may behave consistently because they're organic grown plant material, and you need to define that because that will behave differently than plastic or other things. There is obviously a really close connection, and our closest existing powerhouse is wood. They are a bio-based material by every definition of bio-based. Now, there's obviously differences between forestry and agriculture. And a big trick right now, or a big thing we're trying to figure out in this product category rule, is how do you define that difference? Are we just like wood? But we're not just like wood. And so we're trying to figure out that nuance, which as this industry, the life cycle assessment industry, was originally built, you know, this is just an evolution. And this little thing has never grown to become a full-fledged appendage or whatever. So that's what the hole we're trying to fill, and differentiating us from wood's a big deal. Differentiating us from things that are not bio-based is real. How do we emphasize or show our advantages in a way that is acceptable, that will be acceptable by everyone? These are the tricky parts. And that's still moving forward. The product category rule thing is moving forward. From there, we would attach that to the industry standard for the rest of that building material. Let's say it's flooring. Create flooring that we just defined, then we just tack it to what the rest of the flooring industry does. And then our end of life, we have our special end of life. And that becomes like a giant equation with, I need this information here, 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 here. You take that, and that becomes like a calculator setup. And then we are going to create another system that like sat on top of it, that is like, this is where you enter this information. And this is where you put the validating document that shows that you didn't just come up with this number out of nowhere in this folder. And then just collect all that, because a big part of LCAs is they have to be verified. They have to be third party verified. They have to make sure you're not just making things up. And so by collecting all that stuff in one place, we've like streamlined how you verify. And thus we've lowered the cost of producing the LCA, because now you just fill out this calculator. You don't need to hire an expert necessarily. Then You have the third-party verification is streamlined because they have all the verifying documents right there in a package. They just need to open the folder, boom. They have an official PCR that everybody's following, so that's not a question. They know you followed all those rules, boom. So that was the dream.
In doing that, it basically puts you up against all of the current market materials, and purchasers can now have another product next that they can easily compare benefits and all those, you know, various things that they're looking for. Is that kind of the intent of it, or is it something more?
No, that's exactly the point. You know, we're trying to be comparable to the products on the market. And when you look at the greater Seymour EPA project, like, we had the natural buildings bucket of this project, but steel had a bucket. Concrete, like, I think it was the big four, it was like glass, concrete, steel, and asphalt were the focus of this project. American Wood Council got a project, and they were all doing very similar things of creating these calculators and creating these data collection systems, because that's where that side of the industry is going, and that's the way the EPA wanted to move it, because that way you could compare things, and it was official. Because right now, depending on how you do a life cycle assessment, people can greenwash. People can do that stuff, and it's not really that hard. But if you define PCRs and lock those into place, if you, you know, try to make everything as least ability to manipulate the results, you know, try to systemize it, that's like the safest way. The problem with that is sometimes things get missed. And that's like the pros and cons and the balance. Is if you have some special, unique thing that differs from this equation, and we don't find a way to get that in there, then that data is lost.
So what's the next step then for you? Where do you guys go? You said this is still continuing. Is the possible loss of this grant just slow that down, or are you making any pivots?
The Product Category Rule Committee for Agricultural and Rapidly Renewable Fibers is moving forward. That is continuing. A lot of people in that committee have been hit with the situation that's currently happening. There was supposed to be funding coming from this project to help finish out that group, and that funding is not coming anymore. So we have some funding issues occurring. That part will happen. All the rest of that stuff, the EPD calculator, all that stuff, that's probably not going to happen unless we can find a large amount of funding from other places. For now, let's say for now, we, you know, this was, we have a plan together. We have a blueprint. There's potential in the future, but for right now, it doesn't seem viable. We nail down the PCR. That's a big, giant first step. Personally, as a group, I'm trying to redefine what the Hemp Building Institute is. It has gone back from being five people back down to just being me. And, you know, it's hard. I work really closely with my partner, Todd Hughes. And he was with me on the grant, and as well as some other grants we submitted. And we as a team, and as the team that was involved in this, are having to look at, where does money flow now? If grants are out, you know, I have work, you know, I'm working in different committees with different things. And, you know, there's the little consulting work. So there's activity, but there's no real large amounts of money to actually pay like a decent salary and everything for me or anyone else. And so we kind of have to look at the possibility that money, as far as funding from government agencies, is not there. And private funding may be more difficult, or it's possible that donations will come in, but there are lots of priorities right now and lots of groups that are hurting, because my two worlds are natural building and affordable housing. Affordable housing has been wiped too. I mean, everyone's getting hit right now. And is it more important to send money to me or send money to some organization that's going to give someone a house, you know, a place to live? I don't know how to answer that. So it seems like the for-profit side being on, all right, how do we move this industry and just deal with individual citizens rather than trying to deal with the government and companies and people that want to move in that direction? And so, before this grant was funded, I was working on a project. We were developing a company that we are now going to refocus on, which is called Veri. And basically what we're doing is We're taking these natural building materials that we love and we want to move into the market. And we know that inherently there is questions about how real it is. I don't know how many companies that I know of compared to how many companies are actually producing and can meet a production order and have consistent quality are in the industry. And so being able to go to companies and going, all right, what's your production capacity? What's your quality systems? Have you passed all the testing you need to test to enter these products in the market? Check, 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 check. All right, now I can take this product and move it to a developer and have a conversation with the developer or someone trying to make a larger project and be like, this is the production capacity. These are the costs. These are the quality systems. Like, this is something you can depend on. You don't need to worry about it. And, you know, we'll help walk you through it and get you from point A to point B and getting this stuff installed. That's the concept. So that seems to have to be the necessary shift now is we have to get scrappy. We have to pivot as an industry and as individual groups and companies. And I think if we're going to be focusing on government money, we just have to point out the fact that these are American grown things. Ideally, natural building industry is local, as local as you can get. That means we are American products made by American farmers helping the American economy. And that really needs to be our story rather than the past couple of years, which has been is extremely environmentally friendly. This is really helping these other aspects. The health conversation, I'm assuming, is going down with the environmental conversation as things they don't really care about, but that's an assumption. But the health, the potential health impacts, you know, just you need a shift.
So with our audience, I'm assuming the way for us, for those that believe in this path to support, kind of based on what you were just saying, is really specifying the products that are available on the current projects that we have. For those that are not professionals in the industry, but maybe you're doing some renovations, consider utilizing on their remodel projects. And that's kind of the way to support if you don't, unless you have $1 million that you can donate. Is that correct? Or is there something more that people can do?
The real thing I think anyone can do, hopefully, or we want anyone to do, is just consider these products. You don't even need to jump to the step that you're going to pick it. Just look at the pros and cons of it. You know, look at the costs. You know, we don't know what's going to happen with the relative costs of these products if tariffs hit. We don't. They may be suddenly become parity with other products in the market. We just don't know. But yeah, just consider it. Now, if you really care and you want to move it forward, yes, you can donate to the Hemp Building Institute or something like that, and that can move things forward. You can participate in groups like the Bio-Based Materials Collective and, you know, U.S. Hemp Building Association. The HBI is not members oriented, so we can't help you, but we love the support for sure. Spreading information, education is key.
Now, if everything worked out perfectly, what does that world look like to you?
Okay. So here's what I think may happen in a perfect world. What's happening right now, the government is basically they're stripping off a bunch of stuff. And, you know, there are pros and cons to that. Like, I know so many people that are being hurt by this. I hate it.
Your partial access code is 1. Your partial access code is 1.
But it is in a lot of ways stripping bureaucracy away. So in the next cycle, if we could get the right people with the right minds in there and rebuild these things better, more streamlined, more efficient, it could be a huge step for government policy and moving this stuff forward. I think for the industry, we need to figure out a strategy that makes this stuff used in large volumes. I think that is clear to everybody. And I'm not exactly sure what that strategy is. I have mine. I'm trying mine. But my suggestion, my hope, is that everyone's trying theirs. That we all keep trying to work and focus on the goal of quality and adoption. And this will hopefully really start moving things forward. We see things in Europe. We see patterns, and we're behind Europe. We also see products come out of Europe. So, I mean, we see a way. It can happen. If America does it, it will make everybody do it. So that's why this country is so important for the movement as a whole globally. I think that's become very clear to me over the last 5 or 6 years. So ideal world, hopefully the government gets the stuff together, and that would be great. And that's just a dream. Our industry, people keep fighting and moving, and we find ways to get larger and larger builds and adoptions and really start getting the cash flow needed to build the infrastructure to really stand this up and make it stronger and stronger. I think that's going to take adaptability. I think people are going to have to pivot. People are going to have to think outside the box. But I think that's the dream, is we keep fighting and we win. People see that the benefits are there. The environment's helped. People are living in healthier places. Affordable housing doesn't mean you have a shorter life cycle, you know, lifetime. Everything that got built had these materials in it. People lived in healthier environments where they live longer because they were not exposed to so many chemicals that they breathe in every day. The environment was more in balance with how we did things, that we were pulling down carbon and throwing them into buildings and storing them for 60 to 100 to hundreds of years, depending on how well the buildings stand up. And I mean, this is similar. Hempcrete is a similar construction material to what the Romans used. So it's like that can last forever. We just got to keep going.
Jacob, thank you so much for your time. This has been a great conversation. Really enjoyed it. For those that want to follow along with you and Hemp Building Institute, what's the best way to do so?
Hempbuildinginstitute.org is the website. Go there. I will be honest, I've been slacking pretty hard, and I need to get some updates on there. But that's where it is. There is a link there to join a mail list newsletter. I will try to start getting newsletters out again. I went through a process of, I have this big news to announce. I can't announce it officially. And now that news disappeared. And, you know, it's been a long, it's been like 8-9 months of that. So I've like been sitting there like, I'm so excited. And then now I'm like in a big, and I haven't said anything because I wasn't officially allowed to say anything on either side. Anyway, so I'm going to try to get better about that. So get to the HBI, follow there. I'm on Instagram, Hemp Building Institute on Instagram. If you want to follow me personally, it's Jake Stash. I used to have a mustache. I haven't had a mustache in about 4 or 5 months. Kind of liking it, but it's weird because my handle basically is referencing a stash. I had that stash for a decade, so I think I still earned it. Yeah, so I think that's it. I did want to mention I will be speaking at the Living Future 2025 Bio-Based Construction Summit on May 6th, part of the Living Future 2025 event, May 6th through 8th in Portland, Oregon. I'm supposed to be doing like a pechacucha, which is like this 20 slides, 20 seconds per slide, which makes the whole thing is like 6 minutes and 40 seconds long, automatically playing of the slides. It's supposed, I don't know, I feel like I'm writing songs again, but I will be presenting that at that event. So if you're in the Portland, Oregon area, I'll come by May 6th through 8th or go to Portland May 6th through 8th, Living Future 2025.
All right. Thank you so much, Jacob. Thank you to the listeners for listening, and we will talk again on the next one. Thanks. Thanks for listening. Spaces is brought to you by Lines, my Southern California-based architecture and creative studio that provides services focused on custom homes, home renovations, creative office, and specialty retail spaces. Find out more at lines.studio. That's lines.studio. If you learned something from this episode or think it would resonate with a friend, please share it and rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It really helps others find the show. If you have a question about the built environment or just want to share whatever is on your mind, I'd love to hear from you. You can do that at lines.studio/podcasts. Looking for similar content? Spaces is a proud member of Gable Media, a digital media platform where you can find even more content like this. Visit gablemedia.com, and that's GABLmedia.com. And lastly, before I go, If you want to see additional photos, videos, clips, and other content from this episode, visit lions.studio/podcasts. Talk soon.